It's a big day here at To The Point. We're celebrating episode 50.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Oh yeah, welcome to The Point with Kristen Burt. I love this song. I've had it in my head all day long. This is episode 50. I didn't even know it was episode 50 until someone was like, by the way, it's episode 50, which is amazing. Thank you for all of you guys who have been here since episode one. We sure appreciate it. And joining me for episode 50 is choreographer Gigi Torres.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, how are you?
I'm fantastic. We've never met before.
Yes.
So this is going to be like a whole new experience. Lots of discovery today, which I absolutely love. I thought I'd do a little question of the day because it's also National Sibling Day. It's like National Sibling Day, Equal Pay Day. There's so much. It's Free Ice Cream Cone Day and Ben and Jerry's. But we're going to talk about National Sibling Day, and I'm going to make it dance related. Who is your favorite dance siblings? So there's a lot out there. You got like Derek and Julianne Hough. You've got, let's see, oh, how about like Chloe and Maude Arnold? They're fantastic tappers. Maddie and Mackenzie Ziegler. Like who else? Oh, how about Benji and Lacey Schwimmer? There's a lot out there. So if you guys want to answer the question, you can either do it in the YouTube comments below. You can tweet me, Facebook me, Instagram me, DM me. You know where to find me. Do you have a favorite like set of dance siblings that you love?
I really love Chloe and her sister Maude. They're
amazing.
They're so amazing, and I relate to them so much because I'm about women empowerment.
You know what, you guys, yeah, have you guys worked together at all, like, or pulling your two organizations together?
We haven't, but we met a few weeks ago, so that's nice. We exchanged digits, and I'm like, okay, well, maybe something can happen.
We had Chloe in here, I want to say maybe about 5-6 weeks ago, and it's just, you know, it's really at this point where we all have to come together, and that, you know, if you're like-minded, how do we collectively make an even more powerful, impactful voice? And right. I think that's why I was like, you guys need to do something together.
That's the dream. That's the dream, to just work with your community who are, again, like-minded, mm-hmm. and doing the same thing and going for the same purpose of empowering women and making sure that women are confident.
Oh, I love that. All right. We'll get into that, of course, you know, but we always like to hear people's dance stories, and you're a California baby, aren't you?
I was born and raised here in California.
You were. My goodness. Were you up here in LA or are you Orange County?
Orange County.
All right. So you're behind the orange curtain.
Yeah.
Where did you train growing up?
I grew up, so I started when I was 3. And
so you were one of the little babies.
Yep, studio baby. And I grew up at a Pacific Dance Studio mm-hmm. in Irvine, California. And I was doing jazz and ballet and lyrical, did some point for some years. And I found hip hop when I was 14. And that was my like thing where I'm like, oh.
This is my thing.
This is it.
Was there a certain teacher that like got you in, like just turned the light bulb on for you a little bit brighter and got, this is your style?
Tim Stevenson was my first hip hop teacher and opened my eyes to a whole different world of movement.
That's incredible. Yeah, it's so freeing when you find out like what your style is, honestly.
Totally.
Because I think a lot of times kids, especially when you're a studio kid, and so many of us are and were and everything, and they want you to be well-trained, which is so important if you're planning on doing a professional career. But at the same time, having a little bit of a specialty is also a really great thing, and having something that just gives you so much joy. You know, you go to class and you're like, that's not class. It's Definitely. Just so much fun.
Yeah.
What did it bring for you?
I loved dance, like, at all styles, but I just didn't feel like I belonged in some way. Like, I felt like I was always kind of holding back. And so when I got into my first dance class, I remember Tim, he was like, okay, we're going across the floor. We're doing progressions. I'm like, what do you do progressions? How do we do hip-hop progressions?
Right.
Like, we're just going to walk. Walk. And I'm used to doing, you know, jazz walks across.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, there's isolations. There's so many things that you can do. But
right.
What's a hip hop progression? Just beside, like, is it like, I see in my head, I'm like, it's like finding a little swag, finding a little your groove, like sit in the pocket, because it's a totally different movement than jazz or ballet would be.
It definitely was. And I think for me, when we were going across the floor, I remembered, like, oh, I'm walking to Janet Jackson right now.
Oh, yes.
I can do whatever I want. It was so freeing to be able to just do me. At that age,
mm-hmm.
to be like, okay, I'm just gonna groove and just walk with some bounce, and and see how we go from there. And that was great.
That's awesome. And you know, it's interesting too, because when you're 14, like your body's changing, everything feels awkward, but to find a movement that like makes you feel really good, especially at that really weird age where you're just like, oh, stop. Yeah. It's kind of amazing.
It definitely is. It is. And my teacher, he used to dance for J-Lo. He was good friends with Chris Judd. And it was just nice to know that like, oh, wow, I can do this too. I can be someone that is in dancing with artists. Like, that's what I thought. Like, that's a different world that I wanted to be in, because I grew up loving like Paula Abdul and Janet Jackson. So
they're pretty awesome. I'm like, anytime Rhythm Nation comes on, I'm like, oh my God. Did you come up to LA to take classes? Were you also a competition kid? Where were you in this whole big scheme of the dance world?
I was a competition kid for sure. Mm-hmm. Going to competitions like CAR, and at that time we had another one called ZAR.
CAR and ZAR?
Yeah.
I love it.
So I had that, and I didn't start coming up to LA to take class until I was 18.
Interesting.
I was 18.
Did you, when you graduated from high school, did you make the decision that you were going to college and coming up to LA, or were you coming just to dance? Because that, we've gone through this with a lot of people. I went to NYU for dance. Yes. And in hindsight, in some ways, I'm like, oh, just go and do the dance thing, because college will always be there. But I also understand, like, my parents were like, get your college education. They get nervous. But the way things are now, I almost would say if a kid just had a passion, I'd be like, just go to LA or go to New York, do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's different for me. I'm born and raised in an Asian household. I'm Filipino. Mm-hmm. And I am first generation born here in the States.
That's huge.
So it's huge, because my parents were like, you need to get a college degree here.
This is why we came here for this.
So it was really hard for me to be like, okay, I'm going to go to school. But I went to school for a year and a half. I went to Cal State Long Beach. Mm-hmm. And I kind of jumped around with thinking I'm going to do a dance major, but it was too modern for me. I'm going to go and do nursing. I'm going to go and do liberal studies to be an elementary school teacher. And it was just, I was jumping around so much because I just wanted to dance. I already know. Like, I just was trying to just kind of fill things that didn't serve me. And I was going to take class at Millennium and Debbie Reynolds, mm-hmm. while I was supposed to be in class.
Oh! Your parents obviously know this now, right?
Oh, yeah, they do.
They're good. This is not new news.
Not new news. So I found myself not going to class. And after a while, I said, you know what? I need to go for this full force. And I need to try this full force and not just be pulled everywhere. And it took a long time for them to understand.
Yeah, what is that like? Because I think it's very important, you know, parents have expectations. You, as a child, you never want to disappoint them. Even as an adult, I still don't want to disappoint them. And especially where your parents came here to the United States and you're first generation, there's additional pressure there. And I think that is important to understand.
A lot, yeah.
How long did it take for them to really understand this and give you the blessing that you really needed?
We're going to go a little deep right now.
So. It's okay.
So when I decided to drop out of college, they were not happy. Mm-hmm. And it was not comfortable in my home. Well, they're like, if you're going to do this, you're going to be paying for your own this. Your car, your phone, your insurance, your this and that. I'm like, okay.
It's fair enough.
So I started doing that. I'm like, well, I'm just going to move out too then. So I ended up moving out so I can have my own peace of mind, that I'm like, I'm going to do this full force and no one's going to be in my ear saying to me that I can't do this. And so I moved out, and it honestly took 5 years. I went home during the holidays and things, but it took 5 years for my mom to accept what I do. And it came to the point where I went home and we talked it through. We were crying. And
was there a certain job that you could be like, but I'm dancing here, or I'm doing this. It's taking me to another country, or like across, you know, the U.S. Was there sometimes there's always just like that critical point where you're like, oh my gosh, they understand.
I started teaching overseas when I was 21. And to this point right now, I've taught in 30 different countries.
Wow.
And so at that point, when I was about 24 years old, my mom was like, wow, you're going to Japan and Hong Kong and Russia and Spain to go teach and do what you do. I'm like, yes, all the work that you put into me when I was three.
This is a success.
Exactly.
This is a success. This is the American dream. It may not have like a little diploma and a little cap and gown, but that is a success.
Right. And she believed in me when I felt like I was alone in the studios at, you know, a young age. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I'm like, now I feel like I belong because now I can connect to others. I can teach them life skills. Mm-hmm. And that was great. And that's when she finally realized that, wow, you're doing this on a worldwide scale.
That's so awesome. Were there struggles? Because a lot of us don't understand, like our parents were born here. We were born here. Were there struggles being that first generation that was born here in the United States? Your parents, you know, immigrated here. Did you feel out of place sometimes?
Sometimes because people would just be like, oh yeah, I've been here from my grandma, my great grandma. And I'm like, I don't know a lot from my history, my heritage, which kind of, it sucks sometimes because I want to be able to say something.
Of course.
But I only know as far as what my parents can tell me about maybe their grandparents, but I can't go further than that. And so it was really hard, like growing up, when people would ask me, or like as I was a kid, they're like, so like, where are you from? And I'm like, well, I'm from here.
You're like, Irvine? Irvine.
Yep. They're like, where are you from? I'm like, well, my parents are from Philippines, and I didn't go to the Philippines often. I maybe went twice as a kid.
Have you gone back to teach in the Philippines?
Did.
That's so cool.
I did, back in 2012. It was a really crazy experience because I was just like, wow, these are my people.
you know what? I love, Filipinos are very supportive of the arts. I've really noticed that. And if you're like Filipino and on like American Idol or Filipino and on like one of these amazing competition shows, if you go to visit the Philippines, you are like super rock star. I love that. The outpouring of like passion and support is incredible.
Yes. When I went to go teach, everybody called me Ate. And that's like a sign of respect for like older kind of sister. And they gave me pasalubong, which means like souvenirs. They all gave me gifts, all the students. I'm just holding all of these things like, what? This is crazy.
That's so cool.
So it was amazing for them.
Oh, I love that. See, it all works out the way it's supposed to. It's just like, you just need that, like, you know, then you need your parents just to see behind the wall of like, it's going to be good. You know, I'm going to be okay. We're all going to be okay.
Right. Totally.
That's incredible. We were talking earlier too, you know, you've had kind of an interesting transition where you really knew you wanted to choreograph. That was your goal.
Yes.
You know, you were performing professionally, but you're like, I want to be a choreographer. Was that always a passion, like as you were teaching and things like that? Or was it something that you're like, that's my end game?
Well, I started teaching at a studio for kids when I was 15 already. Mm-hmm. And that is a really young age. I think about it now, I'm like, really? I started that at that age? And I think I was brought up by the studio owner to be a teacher, to really guide these kids with that. And I always had that with me. In high school too, I was the officer of my dance team. And mm-hmm. I felt like I knew I was supposed to lead in some way. And I'm not sure if it was supposed to be choreographing, but it happened when I had my first opportunity to choreograph for Carnival.
Carnival here in Los Angeles, just so everybody knows what it is, since people are from all over the globe watching this. So, and do they do it once a month, or do they do it like every 6 weeks or so?
They do it once a month.
Once a month, okay.
And the first opportunity I had was, I was 20, mm-hmm. and they said, hey, I went to them because I went through a really bad breakup, mm-hmm. and I just said I need to let something go. I need to bring a piece to life, to bring out an emotion. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, actually, someone just dropped out for this month.
Nice.
I'm like, well, here we go.
This is it. Whether I'm ready or not, this is it.
And what I did was I got all of my best girlfriends together that helped me through this breakup to help me dance the story on stage. And after we got off stage in Hollywood at the Key Club when it was there, that was the first time that I experienced dance nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
That thing where you you
it's
dance.
Runner's high.
Right.
Runner's
high. You dance and you don't know what you're doing, but it feels so good. And then you snap out of it after the piece is done and you just feel so amazing.
Yeah. Did you cry at all? Because sometimes it's just a release of all of that.
Yeah.
Vomiting out the old relationship. Bye.
I didn't cry on stage, but I started crying after we walked off stage and I saw my best friend crying who was dancing with me. And I'm like, oh my gosh. She's like, I just feel for you. And I feel this. I just feel things. And I'm like, well, this is what I want.
Yeah.
That's that one moment where I was like, I want this. I want my dancers to feel emotion. I want the audience to feel emotion. I want to share that story for them too, because everybody can relate.
Everyone can relate. We've all been through a breakup, sadly.
And
you're like, I'm never going to love everyone again, but you are. But you need to go through it to get to the other side. And I'm like, if dance helps you get through it, what a wonderful way to get through it.
Right.
You know, instead of just like stalking your ex on Facebook. I mean, that's what people do these days. And I'm like,
no,
like go out and run, dance, like sing, whatever it is, because write, whatever, you know, because it's a much more cathartic way and I think healthy way to get through it all.
Definitely.
How would you describe your style as a choreographer?
Ooh, it's a mix of a lot of things because I was brought up with a lot of things. I don't think it's just hip hop, but I do think it's a mix of hip hop and say like lyrical even, because I love doing like R&B music too. And now the term right now at this moment is called urban movement.
Urban movement.
Yeah.
So would urban movement be considered like a fusion of styles kind of thing?
Yes, I believe that. And I had this conversation too I was on a panel a few years ago. And they were just like, I don't think what you do is hip hop. And they were telling, just jabbing at me for what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know what? Contemporary wasn't named contemporary for a long time.
It was modern dance.
Exactly.
Yep.
And it's just a mix of fusion of styles. And it's the same thing with the hip hop world. Like, we don't know what this is called yet. We're in that kind of limbo transition period where we're like, let's call it urban movement for now.
Well, and we do this we've debated this on So You Think You Can Dance, since I've covered it quite a bit over the last few years, and especially the season where they did stage versus street in season 12,
yes.
Because hip hop is a culture. It's not necessarily like a dance style per se. And then if you get within, like, I guess, you know, you go into all the subcategories of what hip hop is, like we were saying, like there's juking and then there's pop and locking and then there's crumping and there's so many different styles within that, and they don't really do that on So You Think, because asking like a contemporary dancer to start popping and locking in 4 days is not realistic.
Right.
It's like asking, you know, someone to do, okay, you're going to do point now in 4 days and you're a hip hop, you know, dancer.
You've never even taken ballet.
Exactly.
Like, whoa.
Okay, here you go. Yeah, I mean, that's so it's understandable in some ways, but at the same time, it would be nice to educate people a little bit better. They try and throw in every once in a while when they know that they have a crumper on, like the first week they'll do their style, but we don't get really deep dives into that.
Yeah, it's tough because it's hip hop is still new. It's very new.
It's kind of crazy to think of like how new it actually is. Did you see The Get Down? Did you see Baz?
I love The Get Down.
You guys, if you have a Netflix subscription, go and watch The Get Down. It only got one season. It was like a $10 million production, so it's gorgeous. But it really gives you the understanding of like where hip hop culture came from and the birth of it, and you'll see how young it actually is.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it was too expensive for Netflix, but. Great choreography from Rich and Tone.
Yes.
Thought they could have been nominated for an Emmy. Gonna say that. Didn't, but they deserved it.
Too.
Yeah, they deserved it for that.
Do.
But I think like understanding like exactly where all these roots are, they're relatively young roots.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of amazing when you think about it. Who do you look up to as a choreographer? I mean, obviously you said like Janet and Paula, who are both like dancers/choreographers/musicians.
Well, I have a couple pairs of mentors that brought me up, and I still look up to them.
I love
today.
Mentors. I love mentors, seriously.
Yes. So I was, what age was this? Maybe like 20 to about 23. I was mentored by Nappy Tabs. And they just taught me, like Napoleon taught me how to hear music. I'd be in the editing room with him working on the music. And I think the way that Tabitha moves is very Like, there's a lot of isolations in it, but there's a lot of groove in it too. And I think that's how I got brought up to move the way I do as well. And the other pair are Shonique and Lissette.
I don't know Shonique and Lissette.
They are amazing.
All right, tell us about them, because this is, yes. We like to discover like new people and make sure that we totally understand like who everyone is in the dance business, because the world is huge and growing. So
yeah, so Shonique Sneed, mm-hmm. and Lissette Bustamante, they are a duo. They choreograph together, they work together, they have a business called Creating Opportunities, mm-hmm. and that is a business where they work and mentor dancers to get to a higher potential. And that helped me when I was in like a slump. I was in that kind of choreographer's block for a while, mm-hmm. and it was to the point where I almost despised it. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this. And they helped me to be able to say yes and no to things. And they also...
How did they get you through that? Because I think every artist does go through a slump, whether you're a writer or a painter or anything else. You just you're like, I got nothing. And, you know, sometimes you're on deadline for something and you're like, what am I going to do? But how did they push you through that?
They ask a series of questions on what my purpose is and making sure that I knew what that was. And I didn't know what that was at that time. And they did a simple statement. They said, finish this statement, and it's I am blank. And I just thought about it. And
I'm so open to interpretation, right, of what that is.
So I remember saying, okay, I'm going to own up to this. I am a leader. I am an innovator. I am a creator. I am a teacher.
Okay.
And so when I look at those words, I have to make sure that myself, like I immerse myself into what those things are. And before I thought I had to say yes to a lot of things. I'm like, yes, I'll choreograph for you. Yes, I'll do this. Everything that came at me, I was like, yes, 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 yes. But then I forgot that if it didn't align with who I am, maybe I should say no.
Yeah, because then you become scattered and then we don't know what your work is about. It loses focus. And this happens a lot in LA, whether you're pursuing acting or, you know, dancing or anything else, it's one of those that we feel like this is our last job. This happens all the time. And you think, like, if I don't take this opportunity, and here's, you know, the $500 that the project's bringing, or, you know, $5,000, we've all done a job for money, let's just be honest. And you sit there and you think, but I need that $5,000, or I need... But if it's not true and authentic to who you are, and we went through this with Chloe, mm-hmm. she was like, authenticity is everything.
It brings you on your journey, and it makes sure that your journey is the correct path. Because if you say yes, or you say yes to things that are not aligned with your purpose, you're going to get off track.
Yeah,
it's going to take you a while to get back on track. So that totally makes sense.
Yeah, and it makes sense, you know, just only because I'm familiar with, you know, Nappy Tab's career and stuff like that and their trajectory. If you take a look at it, it's very linear and everything really makes sense. Mm-hmm. So if you're not doing that, and you go left and right, it's not saying you can't take risks and try something new, but it has to be a building block.
Yeah, and I think it's about like just knowing who you are inside first, with saying, knowing your values. I think that's the most important thing. You gotta know your values, because if you're asked to say, do this job, and it kind of crosses that value, mm-hmm. then it's not going to work. It's definitely not going to work. And I think with Nappy Tabs and with Shonique and Lissette, everything that they have done aligns with their values. And that's why I look at them and I'm like, thank you so much for giving me this lesson.
Yeah, it's important. And I think we get afraid sometimes of asking for help or asking someone to mentor us. And I was like, it's everything in this business. It's been kind of a lost art form. I feel like there's another surge behind it of like, especially women helping other women, which I love.
Yes.
I know, it makes me so happy. It really does, honestly, because I'm like, we need to be pulling the next generation up, because I'm like, they shouldn't have like what we have. They should have better than us. Mm-hmm. And we want better for them. So because we've had to fight through certain things, and the generation even before that was even harder. So
you keep moving forward.
Yep. Just mm-hmm. keep on moving it forward. That's amazing. All right. Shonique and Lissette. So yes. I'm going to make sure that we go and check that out, yes, for sure. I was like, I love like discovering, you know, new artists and everything else. I want to ask, because we do have a lot of viewers that love So You Think You Can Dance, and you've worked on some of the international versions.
Yes, I have.
Okay. So I know. I'm like, okay, I got some questions. So it's Poland you worked in?
Poland.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then let me just look at my list. Ukraine, mm-hmm. which I think is fascinating, and Scandinavia.
Yes.
How are they different and how are they the same to what we see in the U.S.? So let's start off with the what's the same, because that's probably easier.
The first one I worked on was Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. And I got that opportunity because I was in Norway teaching for 7 weeks.
Ah.
And then one of the producers contacted the studio owner that I was teaching for, and he's like, well, she's here. Can we bring her in too? And I'm like, okay.
So cool. You don't know. Like, you sit there and, like, I think people think sometimes, like, this takes you out of town, but you don't know, like, mm-hmm. who's looking who needs something or, mm-hmm. and there's TV over there. Like, it's not just us.
And what's the same about it was the set at that time. Like, the first sets.
The very first set, yeah.
Very first ones. So I walked to the stage and I was just like, you're like, am I in LA right now?
You're like, am I at CBS Studios? Excuse me? Where are we?
And it looked exactly the same with the staircases and the way that all of the lines were. And that's
a little weird. I mean, weird. I understand because they probably were just like building the brand at that time. Mm-hmm. Do they have the same amount of contestants? I think back in the day it was top 20. So
yeah, I think they do. I wasn't on the first episode, mm-hmm. so I know that I came in the middle.
Yep.
What I did for the first So You Think You Can Dance show that I did in Scandinavia was a duo, mm-hmm. and that was definitely an experience because I was young at the time, and I was just like, I don't, I'm going to put on some moves on you, but then, you know, getting into the room where, say, What cameras can you call? I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing right now.
Right. Had you done a lot of, like, choreographing for TV at that point? Or?
No.
Yeah.
So, no.
But what a great way
it was cool.
to succeed. And it's okay if you make a couple mistakes, because it's a great learning experience.
Mm-hmm. And they were crazy. Really nice to be like, this is how it works. And so it wasn't so.
They mostly speak English over there. There weren't too many language barriers, or a little bit?
They mostly speak English, yes.
Yeah. I was like, I'm sure that they're, I mean, obviously they're Scandinavian, but I was like, a lot, they're usually multilingual over there, right. So.
Ukraine was another story.
I knew Ukraine was going to be another story for sure. So when you do that, are they giving you, like, contemporary dancers to, like, do hip-hop, or were they hip-hop dancers, or is it?
The two, luckily, that I got for Scandinavia were two hip-hop dancers.
Oh, fantastic.
So that was great. When I had Ukraine, I had a hip-hop dancer and a contemporary dancer.
Okay.
And the contemporary dancer did not speak English.
Oh, that's hard, so because you're already giving her, you have a language barrier, and then you have the language barrier of dance.
Yeah. So that was tough, but what, I mean, dance is such a universal language. We made it happen.
Did they provide, or was the other dancer providing sort of interpretation back,
yes,
and forth? Yeah.
He was really helpful, definitely
that's good.
Helpful. And that dance got a lot of praise because I brought, like, a kind of a slower piece. I didn't do just a hip-hop piece, but I did, like, a lyrical type piece.
I love lyrical hip-hop.
Yeah, and that was the first time it was brought to that,
ooh,
country, and they were blown away with it.
That's so cool when you have the opportunity to introduce them to something new. Was their set very similar as well?
Yes.
And they've got,
same,
like, the judges and everything. They have their, like, Nigel and Mary, and
mm-hmm.
that's so crazy.
Taking it back to Scandinavia,
yeah,
it was really crazy because Scandinavia is Norway, Sweden, and Finland.
In Finland, yeah.
So they had the episode structure, and there would be a host speak for every language.
For all three countries?
Yes.
Wow.
It was...
That's talent.
Mind-blowing. I was sitting in the audience for the live show, wow, there's three different languages going on.
That's a lot. That's a big intro, too.
Yes.
And then when they would talk to the contestants or the judges, was everything done in three languages as well? Or did they just do you remember? It's kind of interesting to think about, like, how is the whole show done, like, with three different.
But I knew that some of them, like, understood each other.
Yeah.
So I think, but we were in Norway. So I believe that they were Norwegian judges.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Interesting, though.
It was really interesting.
That's so fascinating. And then you also worked in Poland. How was Poland?
Poland was great. I did a group number and a duo in Poland. And then the next year, I did their boot camp in Morocco.
They have a boot camp?
So they're like kind of like their Las Vegas kind of thing.
Oh, so they're Vegas week. They go to Morocco.
Morocco.
What?
Morocco.
Where we sent last year, last season, we sent the poor kids to Northridge. Northridge, California, the valley. I mean, like, they don't even get Vegas anymore. Yeah. They got to go to Morocco.
Yes.
Oh, we need to talk to Jeff Thacker and like Nigel Lithgow about this. We want to go to Morocco for this. I don't know where it is this year. It's in a new location, but I was like, that sounds amazing.
It
so
was
you're
amazing.
In Morocco doing Vegas week. What was that like? Do they have the same intense process where, you know, everyone gets whittled down each day kind of thing?
Same thing. They do their workshops with certain styles.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do cuts and lots of shooting, and it's
an
a
intense
crazy
week.
Process. Even for us too, they're just like, you're going to be in this room at this time and this room at this time, and we're all just moving and grooving.
Did you get to see anything in Morocco, or were you like literally at the hotel just like?
No, we got to see a lot. We got to walk around. It was amazing.
Oh my gosh!
And they did a little ditty with us, like a little video intro for all the choreographers, and they had us go to a Moroccan beach, and we were just dancing on the beach.
Were you working with any other American choreographers at the time? Do you remember for Poland?
No, it was only me that was there.
Wow.
So that was cool.
That's amazing. Do you know if any of those are still running? Because I know like some of them, like We Lost Canada, I know. And like
Scandinavia is not running anymore. I don't actually know. I don't think the other two are running.
I don't feel like
running.
The others. I know. I'm like trying to think because Australia's not running anymore. Like they were big for a while.
I want to say that Poland was the longest running for out of the three that I worked with.
Yep.
Because Ukraine was the first episode of the first season that I worked with.
Did you call your mother and go, they're taking me to Morocco?
This is true. I'm like, so I'm going to Morocco and working on a boot camp.
That's amazing, though. I'm like, seriously, you're going to Northridge or you're going to Morocco. I'm dying over that. I mean, it's so different. Here's another one that I really, because we have not talked about this on the show, and I know you were an assistant choreographer on this, but for a K-pop tour. And
yes.
I think a lot, you know, it's been kind of like a subculture thing here in the U.S. with BTS coming over.
So popular.
It's starting to grow. And so for people to really understand what K-pop is, K-pop is amazing. So many American choreographers go over there and work. But I don't feel like we're bringing that media attention that these are all the choreographers that are working over here. Like NappyTabs has done a ton of stuff. Like Tony Testa has done a ton of stuff. Mm-hmm. I know you worked on something. You worked with Girls' Generation?
Yes.
Tell us what this is like, because this whole thing is incredible.
I love the process. I was assistant choreographing for Lisette.
Ah, very good. See, there we go.
There we go.
Bring the name back.
The connection.
The connection. Thank you.
And it's for Girls' Generation for their Japan tour. So they, you know, they're a Korean pop group, but they made an album in Japanese.
Wow.
So that's
it was
different.
Probably amazing, and they were superstars, and the level of success is incredible,
yes.
Some of these K-pop groups.
So what happened was we went into the studio here in L.A., and we had a skeleton crew to be certain girls, because there's 9 girls in this group.
Wow.
9.
There's a lot. I feel like BTS is big like that, too. It's like 8 or 9, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we went and did that, filmed everything, and I took the videos with me and went to Korea and did the work to put the movie on.
Lisette did not go with you?
No.
Oh my gosh. So this is a lot. This is a lot of stress because I know that, you know, everything is very specific from the moves to the overall look, the costumes and everything. When you get over there to set it on them, did anything get sort of shuffled around, and did you have to like call Lisette like every day, like, hey, this is what's happening?
No, they had a specific schedule for us, because I think they have a specific schedule for them.
Mm-hmm.
Their days are so full where they're just like, you have to go to this shoot this time and then rehearsal this time and it's music lessons this time. They have them working.
Oh my gosh.
But it was cool because 2 of the girls that were on this group, they're from California. Yeah.
There's some American guy too that's like over there that's like a super like crazy like K-pop star too, that he came from the U.S.
So they had an audition and they made the audition and they went over to Korea to be in this group.
Incredible. Were you able to talk with them a lot just about the experience? Because I would imagine that this is like They're out of their minds. This is so incredible. They're singing to like thousands and thousands of people. They're adored.
It was great for me because one, they spoke English, and the other seven didn't speak English well.
Yeah.
So they were able to translate for me, and I'm like, thank you. And the one of them that I really talked to, she's from Diamond Bar,
that's California.
Orange County.
Yes.
Where I'm from.
Another Orange Curtain girl. All right.
And she was just saying that she can't believe that she's in this experience. Like every day she wakes up like, wow, I'm doing this.
it's insane. Are they making money? Like these girls, are they getting money? Because, you know, even with the boy bands we had, like NSYNC and stuff, like their money was being, shifted elsewhere. And they had to kind of sue to get their money. Like, I don't know how it works in Korea.
I don't know how much they're getting, but I know that everything's through the entertainment company they're a part of. So with Girls' Generation, they're a part of SM Entertainment.
Yes, and there are these big entertainment companies that create these groups. So this is just so people haven't follow K-pop, but it's amazing. And they like each have their own look and their own style. Mm-hmm. It's like a house or whatever.
It really is.
It's incredible. Were you just kind of mind blown when you were like working on this?
Yes, I was just, I can't, same thing with how Tiffany felt too. I was just like, I'm waking up in Korea and I'm about to go set some choreography on these girls. This is awesome.
And how was the movement for it? Because it is very stylized too.
It is. They're a type of group that's very feminine, mm-hmm. and they had to bring that kind of movement too, but strong, feminine, and confident, I would say.
Okay.
And that's what Lissette is with how she choreographs too, and it was a perfect match.
Oh, that's great. Were you able to see some of the tour? Did you go out on some of the tour, or
no,
you set it and then left?
I set it, I left, and then I saw things on YouTube, and it was just crazy seeing these videos on YouTube, and there's like 100,000 people in this arena.
Every night.
Sold out,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, the K-pop scene. I hope we get more of it here just besides BTS, because I think it's like we need a little like revolution here in music and in overall like look and style and dance. And I'm like, that would be a game changer here.
I love how they put so much dance into K-pop. That's what I wish they can do with some American artists.
And the videos are incredible.
Oh.
It's like back in the day when MTV was everything, and they weren't doing like really amazing videos until Michael Jackson came along, but mm-hmm. still it's like, it's an artistic expression. So I kind of like that.
Yeah. And it reminds me a lot of like Missy Elliott, how she was so game changing. And that's what the K-pop scene's doing right now with their videos. They're doing some crazy different things with CGI and all their sets and their, just, it's so extravagant.
They're short films, is really what they are. They're not just like music videos. They're not just like throwing something together. I mean, they're making art.
They are.
In the K-pop style. I love that. There's a big K-pop convention that comes here, and I need to like go one day and just like check it out.
Yeah.
Because they do it here like in downtown LA like once a year or something.
I spoke on one of the panels.
You did?
A few years ago about my experience. It was really fun.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I mean, because people that follow it, I mean, they can tell you everything about it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thanks.
As I said, we're always like running short on time, but I really want to talk about, let's talk about Establish Your Empire and some of this. We were talking about female empowerment, like what you've been working on, because this is really amazing. And it's Equal Pay Day. So, hey, this is a good day to talk about it.
Well, I have two businesses. One of them is Establish Your Empire,
mm-hmm.
and we are 6 years in the running. It's really crazy to me because I'm just like, wow, 6 years in the running. I've had 41 dance training programs under this business,
mm-hmm.
and over 500 alumni members. And it was it's just amazing to see how many dancers come in and out and see what they do after my program.
Is this like a mentoring program for their careers?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's more, I don't want to say it's a program that's just like, here's the movement. We're going to teach you just movement, movement, movement. But it's more about the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love to teach that because you have to have the right mindset to be out here,
every day.
you can't slack on that. So that's what I like to bring with these programs. And we do a lot of different things from goal setting to finding their purpose,
mm-hmm.
to finding what their true authentic movement is. Because a lot of times we're brought up by other teachers and we look like those teachers, but then we go off and we're 18. And we're like, well, what's our movement really like? Is it that person or who am I?
What's my style?
Exactly. So that's really, it's really been cool to have this program because I've had some alumni members go on to dance with Beyonce and Lady Gaga and Demi Lovato. And it's just been, I see them on stage and I'm like, you are living your life.
That's right.
You are doing it.
And you have a dancer and a choreographer track. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's so really important, I think, too.
The choreographer track is the newest one. Mm-hmm. And I brought that to life last year. It's called Build Your Brand. Mm-hmm. And it's a mentor program where we worked with choreographers to find what their true message is. What their message is, what their movement is, and what their purposes with this, like, because you can be a choreographer and you can be dancing, or you can be working for an artist, mm-hmm. but you can also be a concert choreographer.
That's right.
You can also be a choreographer that works at a university. You know, you can be a teacher. There's so many different avenues where people don't know where they can fit until they find out this is available for them.
That's right. And a lot of them do overlap and things like that. And I think we need to figure out a way. There's actually going to be a big Dance USA conference is coming mm-hmm. up in June, and they're doing a panel, which I will be moderating, hey. You guys. But it's all about the commercial dance world and how the commercial dance world can help the concert dance world and bring the two of them together. So when I am able to announce some of the panelists, you guys, I'll let you know, because it's going to be good. But I think that that's super important, too, because you don't have to just be a commercial dancer or a commercial choreographer. You can bridge several worlds on this.
And you can make your own outlet. And I think that's, for me, that's what I did. Because I am, ever since that first carnival piece that I talked about, I've always been women empowerment. Like, how can we empower each other? How can we empower others? And that has been my path. And in this past year, I've been able to, or past few years, I've been able to open up for women's conferences and have some pieces open up there.
Awesome.
I've been able to put together my first series, my video series of women empowerment videos with different concepts and different storylines.
Those are all on YouTube too, you guys. You should go and check them out, because they're amazing.
That's just what I want to bring, like the female narrative.
And you did a very large piece recently with a cast of 50, I understand.
Large.
50 is
large,
not...
show.
That's a very large show. I mean, I was just sitting there thinking, you know, we've got Beyonce at Coachella this weekend. She's using 100 dancers.
Wow.
That's a ton. And you know that they have to be on point. It's Beyonce. When you're trying to get together 50 people, I mean, what was the biggest challenge there?
The biggest challenge was to... Honestly, it wasn't even the choreography, because I feel like that comes natural to me on when my purpose is so strong. But I think what comes out is the organization of it.
Yes.
Like organizing all the rehearsal times, the studio space. These people need to know about this, what they're wearing. These people need to know about that, because it was an hour show mm-hmm. and I had 11 live pieces.
You decided to make it as complicated as possible. Yeah, you're
just
like,
a little bit.
No big deal. But that's, I mean, when it was all said and done, you must have felt like this I've really, you know, accomplished something.
It felt right.
Yeah.
It felt right. And everybody there was so great about it. I remember there's this one woman that came up to me after the show. She must have been in her 70s with her friend, and I gave them all giveaways that were notebooks, because I called it, the show was called Stories from Her, and mm-hmm. it's about females giving their stories about their lives. And I gave them notebooks, and it said, I hope this inspires you to write your story. So she came up to me and she's like, I'm gonna use this tomorrow because I'm so inspired to write my story, and I know it's not too late. And I'm like, no, it's never too late.
It's never too late.
It's never too late to share your story.
I know. And I think people hear it, like, they start thinking of the number. I'm like, I'm this many years old and I can't, you can do whatever you set your mind to. I mean, that's the beauty of art, especially, which is amazing.
Definitely.
We do have to start wrapping up. I know, okay. Which is like kind of shocking. I know, it really does go by so quick. Where can everyone find like all of your videos? Where can they connect with you on social media?
They can go to my YouTube, and that is youtube.com/GigiTorres.
Super easy.
Yep. And then my Instagram and my Twitter are GigiTorres. So G-E-E-G T-O-R-R-E-S.
Cheech.
And on Facebook too, everywhere.
I know. Are we still using Facebook? I'm not sure yet. Like after today, he was talking to Senate. I was like, are we still doing this? I don't know. We'll find out. But definitely Instagram and definitely Twitter for sure. One thing I do want to mention to everyone, and I always like to give you guys a little bit of dance history, which I think is always amazing. Donald McHale, who was an incredible, incredible African-American choreographer, passed away over the weekend. But here's the thing. We are so lucky that we have YouTube and we have all these wonderful things, all these tools to let all the work continue to live on. If you've never seen Rainbow Round My Shoulder, go look it up on YouTube. It is one of his epic pieces. It's really about the African-American experience, and he really brought it to the masses, and I think that's super important. And that's a modern piece because that's the era that he choreographed in, but it would be a contemporary piece for all y'all. And then if you're someone who is into the Broadway scene and the tap scene, he also choreographed Sophisticated Ladies on Broadway with Hinton Battle. There's an amazing piece on YouTube, so go and check that out because we need to know who came before us. Yes. For sure. Gigi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I know. And I'm like, I cannot wait to see what you and Chloe do together. I just know you and Chloe Arnold's going to be great. All right, you guys, thank you for joining us here at To The Point with Kristen Burt. Next week, we are going to have Morgan Larson. You guys asked. You saw her on the Dancing with the Stars tour. She'll be here in studio. For more dance news, be sure to check out dancenetwork.tv. And, of course, thank you to Popcorn Talk. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. Views expressed herein are those of the host only, not necessarily the views of Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.